Welcome back. Let's go forward on the agenda to the consent agenda. And the first item on the consent agenda is Resolution A.
Off.
That's off. Resolution B, authorization to increase hours. We have advisory board appointments tonight to the Community Mental Health Services Board. Kaki Wunderlich, whose term expires December 31st, 2013, and Susan G. Crowell, whose term expires December 31st, 2014. Can I have a motion on the agenda? Kathy Luz Herrera, Frank seconds it. Ready to vote? All those in favor of the consent agenda?
Aye.
Those opposed? I believe that's unanimous. Are there resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Forgot to ask that. I guess not. Let's move on to standing committees. Jim Dennis, Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Thank you, Michael. I have four or five items. Number one, my question is, what does 1% equal in the 2014 budget? Raise your hand if you know the answer. Frank?
$438,000.
Thank you. I hope everyone agrees with his answer. Number two is I put a piece of paper, a one-pager, on your desk, and it said it was titled Legislators, and Kevin's name was at the bottom. And even though inside the budget book there's a wonderful schedule in color, this was a flat look at tentative budget presentation, department and agency budget presentation, public forum, it should have said, on the budget. So what that does is point out specifically, quickly, we have scheduled six listening meetings. We have a public forum on the 17th. We have three expanded voting meetings. We have a ledge meeting to amend the tentative budget and a public hearing in November 12th and November 19th, a potential vote on the budget. So 2 months from today plus 2 days, we should be voting on the final.
On the October 29th meeting, isn't that to be at 5:30?
No, it's a 7 meeting, I think, isn't it?
It should probably be 5:30.
Okay, sorry, 5:30. Perfect.
Thanks.
That's friendly. The others are all 5:30 meeting. We will begin to talk to you after the listening meetings about amendments, and Kevin has left the building. So all amendments, and we will give you the form for that if you can't remember what it was, to Kevin to make changes during the voting meetings. That will come. Number four, you all do remember that if the county administrator's budget cannot be voted on in an affirmative manner and we continue to go through the process, his budget becomes the 2014 budget for lack of action, I guess we would see, or so you know how the final analysis that could be. Number five, we have the six listening meetings. We have the three expanded budget meetings. I'm suggesting that each person give Kathy Covert $20, and we will buy food and drink for you for those 5:30 meetings. Are there any questions?
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Jim. As y'all might imagine, I'm a little beat up around so-called scheduled meetings. So for the record, I would like to clarify, since some of us can't make all the meetings, in fact, most of us can't make all of the meetings, are these required meetings? And if so, how does one get a dispensation, so that these meetings that might be excused are not required? Because expanded budget meetings in the past were not considered required meetings, and if someone had to miss one, it was all right. Now, this year, I have a hunch that it's going to be okay to miss expanded budget meetings, but I just wanted to check with you.
Well,
and
you know,
I'd like to know what it was in the past.
I'm certainly not the rulemaker.
And what we're changing to now.
I am certainly not the rulemaker, but I do know that expanded budget committee can happen with one person in the room. We don't need a quorum. We can start a meeting with one person chairing the meeting and have the expanded budget committee meeting. It's fully, you know, it's certainly, in my mind, I recognize the fact that everyone can't be at every meeting. And, you know, you do what you need to do, you do what you have to do. And, you know, it's not my call, it's not.
Whose call is it? I'm just curious.
There isn't a call.
When these studies go out and are published in the paper and some of us get beat up for missing so-called required meetings, I'm just asking the public, the general public, you know, whoever can tell me who makes up the formula and how does it change from year to year? Because I have a feeling it's going to be different this year.
I'm sorry, what formula are you talking about?
That's what I wonder.
I mean, you're asking.
I don't understand the question, Kathy. You ask, does a person become excused?
No, that's not what I'm asking. Right. What I'm asking is, how does one know whether a meeting is considered a required meeting? In other words, when there's a tally sometime during the year that says that this legislator had 89 meetings that they were required to attend, and another legislator had 59 meetings that they were required to attend, and legislator A, who had 79 meetings, only attended 70 of them, but legislator B, who only had 59, actually attended 52 of them. And so she, and excuse my math here, has a better average than legislator B. And who comes up with this and how is it determined? And just so that, you know, some of us that get beat up for this sort of thing can know the rules, because volunteering for things seems to be a detriment under, and I certainly think that new legislators would be very interested in knowing what this formula is, whoever promulgates it, whether it's the Ithaca Journal or unknown powers.
Let's see. Jim, do you want to respond to
Well,
that?
The only response I can get as an elected official is the moment you get elected to a job and are sworn in, you never have to attend a meeting. And you can go to the West Indies or the Caribbean and spend your 4 years.
Please come with me.
What I want to know, can we take the table with us?
I think it's a self-requiring thing in my mind. If you want to come to the meetings, you come to the meetings.
Actually, sometimes people can't come to the meetings, and that's my whole point.
Okay. And my whole point is it's up to you to decide whether you need to be there or not.
Well, somebody tell the Ithaca Journal that, and whoever they question when they come to collate numbers at the county, if somebody would just tell them that, and the president of the budget committee said so.
Nathan, Peter, Dooley, let's see if we can move on.
Kathy, you said just now what I was going to say. You know, it's just that I remember when the Ithaca Journal, they first started looking at this, it was like committee meetings, and then they expanded it to other types of meetings like the expanded.
But they never said what it was.
Right, I know, and it seems very.
So if you take on more meetings, then your possibility of being graded worse goes higher. So it's a disincentive to volunteer for anything.
People we could appeal to is the Ithaca Journal itself. Yeah.
Well, I hope somebody will do that
for me. Peter Stein.
They can't even spell my name right. 12 years.
It's not the Ithaca Journal. The expanded budget committee is a committee. The meetings that are counted, I believe this is right, is the legislature's meeting, all the committees that you're assigned to, and the expanded budget committee is one that everyone is assigned to. There's nothing more.
Where did you come up with this information? Because that's what I'm trying to get.
Well, I came up with it just by looking at the way it was done. That's all.
But in different years, it's been done different ways. As Nathan and Leslin have said, yes, Peter, it has been done. Some years they include liaison meetings. Some years they've included expanded budget meetings, and some years they haven't. I hope somebody is listening.
Good journal.
Okay. Yeah. Dooley Kiefer.
Well, Jim said what I was going to say about there being no requirement. But I have a question for Jim about the expanded budget committee meeting. You said it can go forward with one person in attendance, and I didn't think any of our committees had that low a quorum.
Give my time to Kath Covert.
I can't imagine that any committee would move forward with one person. But the idea in the expanded budget committee was to allow all members of the legislature to be part of the budget-making process. Before the expanded budget committee took place, we had a system where it was only the budget committee voting on a lot of amendments to the budget and cuts, and many of the other members of the legislature felt cut out in those. And so this was what we came up with years ago as a method. We knew everyone couldn't make all the meetings, and so because it's a committee and it's not the full legislature acting as the legislature, the number for the quorum can be however many people are there. But, Jim, I'm sure... I'm sorry?
The majority of those present.
But remember, those things are only those actions only move it forward eventually to the full legislature and can always be reviewed by the full legislature before adoption.
Mike, I remember the history, but my point is that it's still called budget committee, but it's put the word expanded is in front of it now. And the budget committee, which I think has five members, needs three people to function. And so, by extension, I assumed that the expanded budget committee needed at least three people in order to open its work.
Jonathan?
That's not correct.
Pam?
Well, my understanding of these expanded budget committee meetings is that they're non-voting meetings. I mean, if there is a voting meeting, it's specified, and these are just meetings where presentations are done, made by our department heads and others. And so I was under the impression that these are not official meetings, that the expanded budget committee meeting, that in fact during the time when we have expanded budget committee meetings, the budget committee still continues to meet on its own separately, either before or after, to vote on other things issues that they have to deal with. So I do not believe it's an official meeting.
I think it's an official meeting because of the way it's set up. It's like a committee of the whole.
Yeah, but that's not an official meeting.
Carol Chuck.
I will read to folks from...
I'm sorry, I missed Leslie.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Missed me first.
Oh. I did? I'm sorry.
Do you want me to... I can wait if...
Carol, you can go.
I would read to people from this booklet that I believe we all have, the rules of the Tompkins County Legislature and functions of committees. And, there may be things. I didn't just look at the whole thing, but there is a section on page 10, standing and special committees. And according to our process, the chair of the legislature shall appoint the standing committees, also known as program committees, pursuant to the county charter, within 30 days and assign it. And it's the purview of the chair to assign both standing and other committees. And so I would assume that it would be up to the chair at the beginning of the year to decide whether there's going to be an expanded budget committee, and if so, whether we're all on it or not. But there may be other things in here, but we do have rules that we operate by, and I'm sure that that's in here somewhere, which would dictate whether this is required or not, and it would then be a charter change if we'd like to do it another way.
Let me go to the people I skipped.
Okay.
Brian, I apparently skipped you, and then I apparently skipped Leslie. I apologize to both of you.
I was going to say something snide, but that's not my nature, so I'm not going to do it. We don't answer to the journal. We don't answer. If you can be there and you feel that you should be there, then go. If you have a valid excuse not to, then do that. Ultimately, we answer to our constituents, or in my case, my wife also, but... I don't know. Maybe I'm getting tired.
Leslie?
Thank you. So none of us likes very long meetings, but one of the things that I want to request and ask as we go into these expanded budget committee meetings, I know we have the 15 and the 20 or 30-minute presentations, is to please allow department heads, it's the one time all of us really get to sit in a room and hear presentations, to share the information they want to share. Do they appreciate your question about the format? Because I think sometimes there's much more information you can get outside of a standard format. To just allow people to share the information and respond to the questions without them feeling like there's this ticking clock over their heads. Not to say that we allow them to go on for 2 hours, because we'll all get, you know, crotchety in here. But enough time to get the information that's needed. That's all I ask.
Jim, wrap it up and let's move on.
I have a question.
I will make every attempt to let every department head say what they want to, but frankly, and I will be respectful as to my limit, but we are not going to carry on for 4 hours in a listening meeting. And we have not, I've done this 4 years in a row, I think it's gone better every year, and I expect this year to go better than last year.
Carol, quickly, I guess.
Yeah, I'm assuming that these dates are set now, and that if we open the door of trying to change any of them, it's very dangerous. But we are about to get an invitation on October 16th. The Campus Community Coalition, which consists of the three colleges, Cornell, IC, and TC3, is inviting us all to a meeting on town-gown relations, including challenges and opportunities, on October 16th. Starts at 7 p.m. That would be partway through our meeting at the high school. They're bringing in some big experts in the field from out of town and want to engage in a discussion. I don't know what we want to do with that. It would seem one of the challenges would be coordinating, if you want to have a town-gown discussion, to coordinate with the major bodies in the town. So I just want to let you know.
All right, thank you for the information.
Mike, can you tell us the one correction you made to the sheet that we had?
The special legislature meeting to amend the tentative budget, scheduled for Tuesday the 29th of October, should be 5:30 instead of 7.
Thank you.
Let's move to Public Safety Committee. Brian Robinson is the chair.
Thanks, Mike. We have not met since the last meeting of this body, and we're scheduled to meet at our normal time in October. However, that happens to be Columbus Day. So I don't know what we're doing yet. But we have not discussed that. We may have a meeting the next day, which is the 16th, prior to the legislative meeting, depending on agenda items.
We'll leave that in your able hands to figure out.
Cool. Thanks.
Questions for Brian? Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The WDIC will meet next Wednesday, the 25th, at 3:30 in the Old Jail. I have a very quick question for the Chair of the Budget Committee. I know Budget Committee met this afternoon, Jim, and expanded Budget Committee is coming up. Is there a place where the Budget Committee will be able to consider the resolution and for the workforce, oh, good Lord, for the diversity policy, diversity and inclusion policy?
I'm sure we can have a meeting, but what would you want us to do?
It should be a committee for approval, then to come to the GO, then to the full legislature.
Kathy Covert.
Kathy.
All right. We'll talk about it. Thanks.
I have it tentatively scheduled to go to a special budget meeting on October 1st.
Thank you for
before legislature meeting.
Thank you for letting me.
It's just a tentative date right now, but that's the target date at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
It's on the GO agenda for the 24th.
Thank you.
For a very crisp report, we're going to Health and Human Services, Frank Proto, Chair.
Oh.
Start burning toast in a minute.
You're a dreamer, Mike. I love you. Thank you, Mike. The first thing, the Health Committee did meet last week. I want to first recognize Ted Sheely. Ted Sheely, who's our coordinator for tobacco-free Tompkins and their control program, received a citation from Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton for all his work, and it was a very nice presentation, and I think Ted deserves to take a bow. He and his folks have really done quite a job in getting the word out, and you should have a copy in your red folders of the citation. The committee had a very long meeting. The Care Transitions Program was we were presented with their one-year summary. You'll remember that this is the program that reviews hospital individuals that are transitioning from hospital care back to their homes or into a setting where they'll be cared for. Lisa Holmes did give us quite a positive report. While they're not permitted to give us actual statistics because of the confidentiality of them, the goal was, if you remember, to limit readmissions to the hospital and the emergency room in particular. There seemed to be, I have to be careful how I say this, they seem to be achieving the goal. About 20% it's been reduced. The hospital has tweaked some of the procedures, we were told, and everyone is quite pleased after year one of the way the program is going. This board was very supportive, and the monies that were received from the Centers for Medicine and Medicare and Medicine, CMS out of Washington, really were put to good use. Now we're on to year two, and we're hoping that we can get things even better in year two. I won't go into the entire report. Lisa did give us quite a nice written report. It's already been shared. You remember the three partners in this. Actually, there's four: Cuba Medical Center, HospiCare, Visiting Nurse Service, and the County Office for the Aging. And it's been very well received in the community, and we hope that we can elevate it again. The medicines, there was one story about an individual who wasn't sure what kind of medication they were taking, and they discovered the reason was that this person couldn't read, and that's pretty serious stuff. So anyway, I'll keep that short for you tonight in the interest of time.
Thank you.
But that doesn't end the report, Mike. Sorry. There's a couple of items on the agenda that were pulled off the consent that we're going to be talking about, so I won't go into those right now. But you remember a couple of months back we were told about the hit to FoodNet because of the sequester reduction. Well, they got hit again, and it wasn't as severe, but anything to the FoodNet program can be severe. FoodNet had a decrease due to the sequestering, which is not good news. We had a good report from Frank Krupa at the Health Department regarding the WIC clerks and the nutrition educator, and that's the resolution that is on consent. Amy brought us up to speed on the status of the transition into her new program, into her new rearrangement of the various pieces of the youth program. As it was described, the town of Ithaca, as I understand it, the village of Cayuga Heights, the town of Caroline, because of the Ithaca City School District Association, are going to be working together in a planning mode. The town of Danby and the town of Enfield will probably also be working in the same mode. There's money in the proposed budget for 2014 to help with the plan. I'll be meeting with Rick Dietrich. We had an exchange this morning to get some of Danby's input, and also the chairman of their, I believe the chairman of the group in Danby that's working on it, excuse me, Ted Crane. In addition to that, I just want to let you know that the County Office for the Aging is having an annual public hearing. It's like a review. One meeting is in Groton on October. Everything seems to be happening on October 2nd. October 2nd at 10 o'clock, and then again, they're going to do it again on October 9th at McGraw House at 10 o'clock. The purpose is to review the services that the Office for the Aging offers. In Groton, it's the Center Village Court of the meeting place. And you're invited to come if you like. I know Brian will be there with bells on. Mike, it seems to me that there was another piece that you asked me.
Well, let's go to the – let's see if there are any questions. Maybe it'll come to you.
Okay, I got it here.
Any questions for Frank before we go to the resolutions?
Before we go to the resolution, yesterday's paper had an article in it about building the state building Medicaid housing. I was talking to Patricia Carey this morning, and she's following up on some of that data because we may be in what they're considering the Finger Lakes for the Medicaid portion, and we'd like to stay abreast of it. So I'll keep you posted on that. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Frank. Resolution A.
Resolution in support of establishing a Southern Tier New York State Office for Mental Health Region, and I'd like to move that.
Are you moving the proposed changes by revision by Legislator Kiefer?
Yeah, yes, I'll move that version.
Is there a second? Pat Pryor. Discussion.
Yeah, I want to quickly say a few words about this. All of the changes that Dooley suggested are friendly. They weren't considered ones that would change the import of the resolution. But we wanted to make sure that the state knew where we stood on this, and I don't want to make light of it. Leaving the entire Southern Tier without a facility is not acceptable. And what the state is proposing, I don't know if the rest of you have had a chance to review the OMH, the Office of Mental Health report. There's a copy of it. But not everything in this report it's mostly okay. But not everything here covers the need that we have in this county. But it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick at this point. So we wanted to at least get on the record, and I know Martha has sent a supporting testimony as well as a copy of this resolution, although now we're going to have to amend what she sent because we made some of these changes. This is really serious stuff for the whole Southern Tier, and it leaves us in a very precarious position. We don't want to be having our folks that are in need of the service having to travel along the thruway to get service, excuse me, in one of those facilities. I've chimed in about this at least four times already. Susan is very concerned about it as well. Joe's been working on it with Martha, and I don't think anyone at the state level is going to come away with a feeling that we don't have a major concern. Nathan was pretty involved because of the impact on services for hospitals. Cuba Medical Center, as you remember, has 26 places, 20 adults, 6 for young adults, and they're concerned that they're going to be competing across the state for a shrinking number of spaces. Nathan, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you want to say anything
Well, I think what was interesting in the meeting is that Patricia Carey mentioned that, you know, when it comes to both the Elmira, I mean, especially the Elmira Center, the original resolution had talked about just the Binghamton Center, but the Elmira Center is a significant center for our youth that need placement. And so that's why I think it's especially important that, as in Dooley's resolution, that we mention both facilities. But, yeah, this is a significant issue. And, you know, when it comes to mental health, just like when we talked about Lakeside Nursing Home back in the day, you know, proximity is very important in the healing process. And when you have young people that are going an hour plus away, you know, to Syracuse or beyond, it means that it's harder for their families to see them. So it's important that we fight to get as many of these centers as close to us as possible.
Frank, thank you for the efforts of your committee and Joe, Martha Robertson, and everyone. This is so important for our most vulnerable population.
Thanks, Mike.
Are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Can we take the resolution C next?
Resolution C.
Is that yours?
Yeah, that's mine too.
Yes, okay.
Budget adjustment, revenue decrease for Title V, Office for the Aging, and I'll move that. I'll move the revised version that was in your red folders that Dooley submitted.
Do we have a second? Kathy Luz Herrera.
Basically, what we've done is we've moved the explanation up into the body of the resolution because the information there is pretty important. This is the cut is not well thought out as far as we're concerned, so we wanted to make sure that they were.
Any further discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
The next meeting of the committee is October 8th. You're all welcome.
Let's move on to facilities and infrastructure. Peter Stein, Chair.
Our last meeting was yesterday, and at that meeting we approved a bunch of resolutions, which I'll get to in a minute. But what we did do is spend considerable time talking about the results of the Ellis Hollow Road experiment to see what the what colored shoulders do, and I'd like to describe that to you. So I have some handouts here. This way.
Can you talk while those are being handed out, Peter?
What?
Can you go ahead and talk while these are being handed out?
Well, I'd like to have people have them in front of them. So as you know, we talked about using painted colored shoulders to make some to try to find out do colored shoulders significantly reduce speeds of cars on roads. And we therefore took advantage of the fact that we were repairing the road on Ellis Hollow Road, and we measured the speeds after the road was repaired, but before the shoulders were painted, and then the shoulders were painted, and then we measured the speeds again. So that's the experiment. It's pretty straightforward. And the piece of paper that you're looking at shows you the results. You have on the graph a time. On the x-axis is the time, and the vertical red line means that the construction detour was removed. So there was now traffic after that was driving on Ellis Hollow Road through the area where the construction had taken place. And then somewhere towards the end of that, you see there's a vertical green line, which means at that time shoulder coloring was completed. So what you're supposed to look at is the points immediately after the road was finished, and compare them to the points that are immediately after the shoulder coloring was completed. And those dots up there are the red and the I guess it's a black line, indicate the points. There are two points immediately after the road was reopened, and the red line shows the speed limit that 85% of the people drive at. And the blue line is the average speed of the cars over there. And now the question is, was that reduced by the color shouldering, the colored shoulders? And it seems clear that there's no evidence that the colored shoulders reduce the speeds. If you notice, the most reliable data is the average, not the 85 percentile. If we look at the black graph, we'll see that right after the construction was done, so we had a new road with wider shoulders, the average speeds measured were 49.5 and 49.5, two readings. And then if you look right after the green line, what you'll see is now the colored shoulders are in place, and the speeds measured are 50, 50, 49.6, and 50. And the message is clear. It doesn't work. I don't think there's anything more that can be said about it than that.
Peter, are you going to have more on your report, or do you want to take questions?
That really is all I have to report.
Right.
Except
Carol Chalk, and then I have Dooley Kiefer. Was there another hand? Carol?
So I would ask for two things. One is in our packets, there was another version of this that showed it at a very different, not packets tonight, but at the committee meeting, that was a packet page that showed this at a very different scale. It showed the top portion, so it really gave the variety, the variances between the points in a very different light. And I, rather than repeat the discussion here, because I mean there are five people on the committee, we had probably at least six or seven different perspectives. I'd ask if the chair of the committee, if you're able to present maybe something about what the variety of opinions and discussion was at the committee meeting about this and what these showed and how we should interpret them and what further we should do with them in the future.
I'm sorry. Do you want to respond?
Yes. I know that there was some controversy about that at the meeting. In particular, Carol and Dooley felt that my characterization of the data is incorrect. The way I characterized it to you now is the way I characterized it at the meeting. I honestly did not understand what it was, the points that you and Dooley were making. And so I think that you should repeat them for this group and let them hear what your objection to my conclusion is.
Dooley?
Well,
Dooley?
Can I do a follow-up then? Is he saying, I mean, I was asking for the chair to give the whole group a sense of the variety, because I think that's what I'd like to have us do as chairs, to, you know, not just represent our own views.
Carol, I'm not representing my own views. I simply did not understand the point that the two of you were making. So I would if I could, honestly.
So there was questions that came up about the methodology that was used in coming to these figures, and then if you saw it at a different scale, there were some possible different conclusions to reach about at what points the extent to which the speed of the traffic went up or down before and after. We fixed up the road. You'll see the line starts to go up between the red and the green line, and that showed it at the larger scale a lot more. So there's about 5, 6, 7 miles per hour difference in the speed. And then we colored the shoulders, and it came down a little bit. So there was a lot of discussion about how do we interpret that, how big a difference in speed do we want to achieve for public safety, how do we balance the needs to keep our roads in great condition so that when we do have floods, as they go through wear and tear, We don't have deteriorating roads, but then that encourages speeding when you've got a fresh new road. So how do we in the future keep that on our radar screen, look at enforcement issues so that crosses committees, and you know, not just declare this done. I think that was the main point that we were going for, but it was a lot longer discussion than that. Thank you.
Julie.
Thank you. To characterize this as an experiment seems unfortunate to me. Usually with an experiment, ahead of time, you figure out what you want to do, how you're going to test things, and how you're going to evaluate the data. Instead, what this is taking advantage of a project which did not go smoothly at all, and graphs some data points, but without any of the raw background information, which is what I've asked to see. For example, you don't know what the actual dates are, what the weather conditions were. You don't know the hours. You don't know whether traffic was heavier on any of those days due to Cornell's schedule or other detours. You don't know any of the other things. So I have trouble putting much credence in the usefulness of this, but when I look at it, even though it says colored shoulder coloring completed, it doesn't really say when the shoulder coloring started and how it was not adequately done and it had to go back and get filled in and the different problems. But the amazing thing is that the speeds aren't so much higher. Because when a road that has been rutted and cracked gets fixed, the chances of the public recognizing how much easier it is to drive and raising the average speed limit higher than any of this is pretty great, I believe. And to see that that hasn't happened could be interpreted as saying, darn, the coloring worked. It kept it from going up higher. So I don't feel that you can conclude anything from this, but I am anxious to see the conditions and the background on which these data points exist.
Sounds like a difference of opinion. Jim Dennis, and then let's move into the resolutions.
Well, I'm on the committee also, and I guess I've been on the legislature 8 years, and I didn't hear all the difficulty. What were the difficulties with the construction of this road other than you know, it seemed like it went along fairly well, and it's my sense as a driver that if you smooth out a road, cars are going to go faster. You could paint the side pink, and they're still going to go faster. And to say something that, well, it didn't go as fast as we thought they should, but they're over the speed limit, is pretty disingenuous. And, you know, you drive in that road, it is not a fast driving road. I mean, you really don't want to drive very fast out there.
Peter, then I want your resolutions.
Okay. Well, let me just point out in answer to what Dooley said, that effect, namely that it didn't go up, so that must mean the colored shoulders kept it down, is something you could make if, in fact, the data you took for the baseline was before the road was fixed up. The road was fixed up at the red line. At the red line, the road was fixed up, and drivers who went on there saw and were in the environment that they saw were the wider shoulders. And I don't know what it was before that road was rebuilt. Maybe it was lower. But they were driving on a street that had been freshly preserved, looked good, and if you wanted a speed, you could. And they got average speeds of 49.5 miles per hour. Then after the shoulders shoulders were painted, they had speeds of 50 miles an hour and 49.5. And I am unable to make an argument that means that the colored shoulders held down the speed. It just does not make any sense to me.
Thank you. All right, Peter, can we move on to Resolution D, please?
Sure. Resolution D, ID 4385, budget adjustment to transfer from highway fund balance to reimbursed funding expended to address storm recovery, highway division. And I'll move that.
Carol. Discussion? Dooley?
For clarity, I would suggest amending the first whereas to insert damage caused by heavy rains. So I move that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I consider that not friendly. These were all moved at the committee and they were rejected.
You want to move that as an amendment? Or?
I just did.
All right. Is there a second for that amendment? Yeah. Seconded by Pam. Discussion on the amendment.
You restate it, Mike, please.
To insert in the first whereas, after highway division, as a result, was it of damage caused by heavy rains?
Of damage caused by heavy rains. Yes.
So of damage caused by. We're adding three words in the amendment. So can we vote on that?
Yes.
Those in favor of this amendment, raise your hand. Keep them up. One, two. Those opposed? Eight to six. Fails. Anything else?
Can we take a vote on the amendment now? Oh, can we take a vote on the motion now that that's failed?
That's what I want to know, if there's anything else.
Oh, okay.
Are we ready to vote on the motion?
Yes.
All those in favor? I'm sorry, this takes a short roll call vote. Go ahead, Kathy.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Anyone want to be recorded as voting no? Thank you, that passes.
Okay.
E.
ID 4379, authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation for County Road 109, the Hanshaw Road reconstruction. And I'll move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis.
That's the one in the packets, right? It's adopted by the committee?
That's correct.
Call a question.
Ready to vote?
Yes,
all
sir.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Resolution F, 4372, authorizing a supplemental consultant agreement with CNS companies for full-time construction observation and contract administration services in connection with a perimeter security fence improvement project at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and I move that.
Seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Question, Frank?
Yeah, just a quick question. Peter, can you quickly say what what will be done? I was just reading the attached scope of work, but can you, for the benefit of the public, because it's quite expensive, can you at least say what it's supposed to cover?
Well, my understanding is that this is a project that is required by the FAA. It is to build an airport fence that will exclude animals. The problem with the fence we have is that animals have been burrowing under it. And this is a fence that is set much deeper into the ground. It's not trivial because, you know, animals on a runway can cause very severe damage to an airplane.
Thanks.
Carol?
Yeah, I voted against this in committee. Basically, I voted against the main, you know, the project itself, the award of the bid, and then because the consultant services are a percentage of that, that led me to vote against this one as well. I voted for the one accepting the money from the FAA to cover it, because if we're going to do it, we should accept the money for it. My sense is that we absolutely need to do this project. Deer and other animals are getting on the runway. If you have to dig the fence deep under the ground for burrowing animals, There are other things that are part of this project that we do need to be doing. It's safety. The FAA requires it. We should do it. My objection to it was I just thought that the bids came in way too high. This is a fence. It's 10,000 feet of fence, but it's a fence, and it's coming out over $100 a foot for fencing. And those of you who have ever put in a fence, even a good fence, even in my community, we have a lot of deer problem, and people are putting in fences like this. You know, they range from 12 to expensive fence, 40, 50 cents a foot, plus the extras that we're doing. I just thought this just got up way too high, and we said government, and the cost went up. And so I just thought we should go and get some other estimates on this, and that's why I voted against it there, and I believe I will vote against it here unless somebody convinces me otherwise.
Jim Dennis.
I would like to call the question.
Second to call. Do we need to do this, or can we just move ahead with the vote? Are we ready to vote? Let's just vote. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's two against.
Okay. Resolution G, 4384, authorizing acceptance of an FAA grant to complete perimeter security fence improvements, replace snow removal equipment, and design a terminal apron expansion, the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. And I'd like to move that.
Seconded by Pat Pryor. Discussion? Ready to vote? Those in favor? Those opposed? One opposed.
Resolution H, award of bid perimeter security fence.
I'm sorry. Wait, I thought, were we just doing the acceptance of the money?
Just did G.
I'm sorry. I'd like to vote for that one. I did announce that.
Anybody have any objection to letting her change your vote at this point?
No.
All right.
Okay. Well, that threw me off. Where are we?
We're down to H.
H. ID 4371, award of bid perimeter security fence improvements, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. I'd move that.
There's a revised version. Are you moving the revised version?
I'm really moving the revised version.
Is
yes.
There a second? Seconded by Leslin, being Clairborn. Pam McAsey.
Thank you. Well, I just have to say that I, in principle, I'm supporting this, but the fact that and perhaps you discussed this in the committee, but we are not allowing any discussion on this. I mean, I will vote against it because I think Carol's questions or comments are legitimate. But if people don't want to talk about it, then I will vote against it.
I don't understand. You're saying we aren't allowing discussion. Is there something you'd like to discuss about it?
I'm just saying that you called the question on the last one when Carol raised this issue.
No, he didn't, Pam. No one else had anything they wanted to say.
No.
Jim called a question, but it never got seconded.
Voted on. We just voted on the issue.
Okay. Maybe that's then. I guess I still will vote against it because I have questions too. That's a legitimate question you raise.
Well, why don't we just
raise it?
We can go with that.
Kathy, then Jim.
I'll just start out by saying a fence for deer is different than a fence that prevents burrowing. Anybody that's ever had a dog that digs under a fence, you got to do all kind of stuff. This is a fence that has to be built by federal requirements for a location that is an airport where there's safety considerations, not just for the planes, but the passengers and the employees. I know it sounds excessive, but I'm not the engineer estimating it, and we do have engineers, and they did provide, I think, balanced quotes. But I think it's great to have questions, and I wouldn't restrict you in any way, but people do have the right to call the question. It's just that Mike and his chairing decided that maybe we didn't need to. I thought it went very well. I just can't help myself from talking right now.
Jim?
The comments that the legislator makes call into question the bidding process. And the bidding process is completely legitimate. They put out their bids, the lowest bid, the bids come in, they accept the bid. I mean, it gives the feeling that somehow the process is wrong, and it's not wrong. They followed the letter of the law to do that.
Frank.
Yeah, I may have some questions, but I want to defer to Carol. Can you ask your questions again?
Well, we discussed this in committee, and the other it was 4-1. The other members of the committee.
I thought she did, Frank.
I think that I did. I just thought that we could have, in going back out and encouraging maybe smaller local contractors. I understand that it's more expensive to include the section that goes under the ground. The estimates I was that I had asked around about just didn't go as high, even including the burrowing underground. And I thought we could do better, and that if we took a little more time, we could do better. Our engineers and the other members of the committee didn't feel that way, but I do think it was a legitimate question to ask, both in the committee and here. I wanted people to know that it was not a unanimous vote at the committee and have their own chance to discuss it. I do think the question was called a little bit early after I raised the point. If other people have questions, they can follow up. Joe, I don't know if you now want the opportunity to talk about why you think this was okay and why we couldn't have done better. But $1.25 million to do this kind of project just seems high. I don't expect to pay $100,000, but $800,000. I don't know where it would be if we had made the effort to go back out. And I just feel like I've got to draw the line somewhere in my own conscience about at what point do we try to do better. Money for our taxpayers.
I think the point's made here.
I have a question for the county administrator. I think I do not fully understand the bidding process, but once we have let a bid and we have a person who the low responder we deem to be qualified to do the project, do we have the right to say we want to do it again and see if there's anyone cheaper?
Yes.
We do. Okay. Thank you.
Frank, and then let's vote.
Carol, I may be the only one around this table, I'm not sure, that has a pilot's license or did have.
I have a pilot's license.
Oh, there you go, Peter. I knew we had something in common. Mine is not active anymore.
Neither is mine.
Peter never ceases to amaze us.
I fly.
That's okay. Peter and I fly.
I hope to have better pilots, but I do fly.
We used to fly in open cockpit planes. That'll satisfy Will's
comment. Go ahead, Frank.
This includes, as I read the description, this includes removal of the existing fence in sections. That's not the fence that's there. That's not an easy job. Nobody's happy about spending this kind of money, most of which is coming from the feds anyway. I mean, it's just coming out of a different pocket, I guess. But I think that I'm satisfied with the conversation that took place at the committee and defer to Peter. I think he described it well, and we should approve this for the safety of anybody on the airline. And by the way, I don't know, Peter, maybe you know, how many feet of fencing is this? It's several miles of fencing.
10,000.
Yeah, a couple of miles.
2 miles.
Yeah.
Thank you. Support this, will you?
Frank, I'm glad you made the point that the local share here is $44,556.50. The rest is grant funding. Leslie?
Mr. Chair, might I just add, sitting on the Air Service Board, how much we've talked about this, that it's more than just fencing. There's also a lot of drainage damage that was done that needs to be repaired in order for the new fence to be secure. The FAA also requires, and you said this, Carol, the FAA also requires a certain standard of fencing done a particular way, so it does cost a lot more, unfortunately. That's why the FAA, the federal government, gives that money than if we were just to go out and get any old fence. And I know that's not what you're saying, but it's more than just fencing. It's a lot of repair work that has to be done even before we can put the new fence down. New security fence, that is.
Can we vote? Dooley? Quick?
The good news about this particular bid is that the low bidder was remarkably much lower than all the other bidders. which actually makes one nervous, but our consultants, CNS, said they are familiar with this company and they will do good work. So that's what we pay CNS to tell us, I guess. The other thing I would like to say, Mike, is that the FAA's way of doing business allows consultants to earn profit on overhead. It's crazy. It's stuff we would never allow. But those are the rules that we get the money under.
You're absolutely right. All right, let's vote. All those in favor of awarding the bid?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. That's 13 to 1.
Resolution I, ID 4318, award of bid customer service personnel, that is the airport ambassador's contract for the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. I'll move that.
Seconded by Dooley. I'm sorry.
I'll second that.
I saw Dooley first. Yeah. Discussion? Ready to vote? Dooley?
Well, I'm not sure everybody read the attachment, but our airport has contracted with this same company. They've changed their name, so it's a new name now. But in the last contract, as well as this contract, they always pay the livable wage.
Mm-hmm. Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Peter. Economic Development Committee.
Hang on.
Sorry, Brian.
I actually have one last question. And I really do need to go back to colored shoulders, believe it or not.
We have to?
Well.
Go ahead.
No, seriously, because we just did the a resolution for Hanshaw Road, which I know that there were some bids that went out for different colored asphalt in there. And in light of the irrefutable evidence that that really doesn't matter. I just want to know what's the status of that? Because it is extra money.
Yeah, that may I answer?
Yes, please.
That was an add-on to the bid, and we did not accept that. That bid came back very, very high. It was something like $1 million for coloring the shoulders, and we did not accept that. So this new information does not affect any decision that we made.
Okay, so that's not reflected in the figures that we agreed to in this. Okay,
no.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, let's move on. Will Burbank chairs Economic Development Committee.
Thank you, Mike. The good news is that we have no resolutions, and I will make a quick report because I know it is late.
Thank you.
We met on September 5th, and we basically had three parts to our meeting. The first was a slide presentation by G. McFeeters talking about the current development projects that are happening throughout the county. I was stunned, quite frankly, at the amount of construction that is underway and learning about, you drive by, you say, what is that? Well, this was your chance to really get a sense. The good news is there is truly a lot happening. And I'm sure everybody's seen what's happening downtown, and Gary Ferguson came in and talked about that point. She did make us aware of a problem, which was that there is a real concern about the dredging of the inlet, or the lack thereof, which is linked to the hydrilla problem, and the fact that basically having found the hydrilla and not quite successful, certainly not eradicating it, but not even having an effective protocol at this point that gives assurance that it can be eradicated. That has basically put on hold the dredging issue, the project. And the committee recognized that this really was an issue that needed to go to the Water Resources Council, and it will, and it has. But she raised it as a real point of concern in terms of the economic vitality of our waterfront and our lake. The second part of our presentation we had was from Jen Rhodes Dorman, who is involved in promoting the local living economy. And if that term doesn't have immediate meaning, it's basically a group of folks that have banded together to promote
awareness of what it means to buy and produce locally produced items, and why there's inherent value in doing so. These are the folks that publish a very, very good annual guide to local businesses. And Jan gave us a presentation, and she encouraged us to think if we could do more in terms of local procurement. And I think that's a topic that we will want to look more at building on Carol's question, are there any contractors locally that could be doing more of the work? So the third and probably most important part was a discussion of TCAD's work plan for the coming year, or more specifically, a review of what they had been doing this year and where they might be moving next year. And so we did that, and our next meeting will be on October, I wrote this down and I've lost it, October 3rd. I did want to make people aware of two things that emerge since the meeting. One of the responsibilities of the Economic Development Committee is we are the link to the STPB. And as I've reported in times past, there are some real concerns about the ticketing operation that has been run by the Community Arts Partnership. Specifically, some of the largest users of that have announced an intention to withdraw, and that seems to be underway. And just people should just know that the situation is on flux, and more will be coming both to the committee later, because I think there are going to be some issues we'll have to deal with. And finally, we all should have gotten an announcement from Martha this morning that the developer of the Emerson property is offering tours. If anybody would like to go see this vast complex that has enormous potential in terms of economic development, he is saying that he does it by golf cart, and the tours take, I think he's got a short and a long version, but I guess the long version is about an hour and a half. You should have gotten the email, and I quickly said, I want to go, and I would encourage others to do so, so that we know what's up there. And as I say, we'll be meeting on October 3rd, and that is my report.
Kathy?
Thank you. Oh, Will, I'm glad you brought up the message about the trip to Emerson. It piqued my interest because I'm worried that the county might be interested in buying some of that horribly polluted property. Is that what's going on, or are we just touring it so that the developer can get some legislators to have an idea what's going on?
Well, it's interesting because that issue was discussed at the committee level, and we were, the details of what's being proposed, I think, have yet to be fleshed out, and that's part of the reason of going to the tour. But our understanding from Heather Filiberto of TCAD is that the polluted portions of the property essentially will be separated out and will be addressed by the current owners.
After having been burned by the whole Ithaca gun, where the city ended up through long periods of time,
it's a long history,
bearing much of the cost of the cleanup, I would be leery of the county taking on any of this without some assurance of complete and thoroughly vetted cleanup beforehand and throughout it.
Jim Dennis.
I have no comment.
Carol Chock.
I can speak to that a little bit. I think Kathy asks a very good question. The developer who's attempting to purchase this property has been coming to the South Hill Civic Association meetings. And
the man who works for him, not the man. Developer.
Yes, you're right. They've been giving us information, and then there's been information in the paper. What Emerson is proposing to do is to divide that property, take the least polluted portion of it, and sell it to this developer, hold on to the most polluted portion. The developer received funding through the Regional Economic Development Council to study the site and make sure that they weren't getting saddled with the cleanup. The agency in charge of overseeing the cleanup and making sure that it is done correctly is the DEC. It's kind of been taken out of our hands. People have seen the accounts in the news lately about their sense of their own staffing and what they're able to handle, but they are the ones who have responsibility. So I think what Heather told us was that they're just leaving that in the hands of the DEC and not, you know, not good. They don't see it as TCAD's responsibility, or then the city doesn't really see it as their responsibility to oversee this cleanup, but that there is supposed to be a conversation going on between Emerson and the DEC about a time frame and how this will be cleaned up. And there may be more that we should do to just make sure that we insist that that's in writing and that Emerson is still going to absorb the responsibility and the taxpayer at whatever level, whether that's state, city, or county level, won't be held with that as this plan goes forward.
Thank you. Can we move on? Pam?
This is an issue that I've sort of been involved with for many years. And the responsible parties are not just Emerson, but actually BorgWarner, because they owned the property as Morse Chain. So that the responsibility stays with those entities. It does not disappear. DEC has been involved up there for years, and which is not just doesn't really very reassuring because of the fact that there's still so much that needs to happen. But I just want to make clear that in terms of the legally responsible parties are Emerson and BorgWarner.
Okay, thank you. Capital Plan Review Committee met on September 11th. We're still waiting for the appraisal to come in for the old library. But we had some good news, and that is after the cleanup from the roof leak and the various testing and the things that we did to clean up in there, we have been able to move the day reporting staff back there. And all reports are they're pleased to be back there for the time being, of course. So I think that's important. We discussed the disposition of the library and basically decided to ask our administration to put together a request for
expressions of interest.
Expressions of interest. That's the words I was looking for, which is not quite an RFQ or an RFP, but it's something shorter that will go around to see what kinds of thoughts there might be for redevelopment or reuse of this property. It could be from governmental units, could be from private developers, it could be from not-for-profits, any of those kinds of things. So we'll be putting that together and reviewing it at our next meeting to see if we want to put that out to see what kind of reactions we get. The other thing we met here at this meeting or at that meeting because they wanted to work on the sound system and the light system for the legislature meetings. And we heard from Holt Architects and the consultant who was working on the lighting and audio, and heard some of the corrections they've been making to make this better. And I think it's continuing to get better and better, and I think it's better tonight than it has been in the first couple of meetings we've had. But that's pretty much, they wanted us to work on it, and then we helped them with that. Kathy, and then Will.
Thank you. Thanks for the report on the old library. As I mentioned before, people in my district are interested in that. I'm pleased that y'all are going forward asking for developers, nonprofits, and who else was it?
Whoever wants to respond.
Well, what's of interest to me is, and what I was wondering about from before, is will there be a time when the public can say what they might be interested in there, possibly before, because it would be great for us to consider that that's going to have an impact on that whole section, not just of downtown, but, you know, people's perception as they come either way on basically a building that's, you know, part of, it's part of our campus in a way, and it's really important. It would be great to hear from the taxpayers and the public what their ideas might be, because, you know, once we get locked into expressions of interest and start going, we're just going to go. Who knows where it'll go? Wouldn't it be great to hear from the public at some point?
We talked about whether we should have a public hearing just for that purposes. And I think the committee felt that initially we want to go this direction rather than bring in a lot of raise a lot of expectations as to what might happen with it. And maybe there are a lot of folks that have a lot of great ideas, but they may not be saleable.
If I could just follow up and say, I'm not really asking for something in the line of a public hearing, something like what we do when we go out and talk about the budget. Talk about the property, statistics about the property, how much we've foregone in taxes possibly based on, you know, some estimates or another. Like, for example, if you were to build it up with residences, if you were to do mixed-use retail, those numbers can be plucked out of thin air pretty much. I mean, we've seen it done. And just to give people an idea, I know people are going to have a million different ideas, but they're going to do that before, during, and after. And to my way of thinking, even if these ideas aren't tenable, our community likes to participate, and they like to hear about things early rather than late. So I understand the fear of raising expectations, but it is a democracy, and it would be great to let people talk about what they would like to see, what their visions might be, because I believe that this, again, my weird belief in collectivity, that diverse groups make better decisions and that something might emerge from that that is actually doable. And, you know, sometimes these days nonprofits have to get together to make things happen. Just articulating that in a public venue, you know, in a facilitated discussion could spark some very interesting outcomes that would be great for us and might be better than ceding our fate to the highest bidder.
Happy to bring that back to the committee and raise it for discussion further.
I'll try and make the next meeting. I'll try and find out when it is.
Jim Dennis? Will Burbank?
I don't want to talk.
Will?
Thank you, Mike. I'm certainly aware the audio has gotten better. I have heard half a dozen comments from people who have stumbled onto the broadcasts of these meetings, and they say we look hideous. I mean, just unbelievably bad. And worse than usual.
It's because of no makeup.
The problem has to do with the overhead light creating shadows. It's been compared to sort of Halloweenish kind of thing. So anybody who might be running for re-election, you might want to think about the image here.
We think it has to do with Time Warner going from analog to digital without the right equipment, and that the quality of the broadcast, no question about it, has declined, and we're aware of that.
It's both things together.
We haven't gotten any prettier either.
Folks, it's after 9. Let's see if we can't get this.
Speak for yourself.
I think makeup is the answer.
Peter.
Carol?
Yeah, was one of the issues you talked about the screen at all?
No.
I did notice.
No.
Is it possible for this screen to come down further? You did talk, because I could see the whole bottom half of the screen. The committee question came up
whether the whole screen could come down, and it can't without blocking the camera's angles.
On the other hand, Jim Blizzard said he would be glad to try it that way. We didn't make any decisions.
Okay. It was really not like in the presentation that the bottom half of what was in the screen I could read, but the top half, because of the way the lights shine into our eyes on this side, what's on the top half, it's hard to see. So if the screen were a little bit lower, we'd be able to read it better.
I think you have to move your chair.
But on top of the desk? Then you don't
need it. Okay. Move your chair 30 degrees, and you'll see it better.
Let's turn to Pat Pryor for a report on the Government Operations Committee. Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mike. The Government Operations Committee has not met since our previous legislature meeting. We will be meeting on September 24th at 10 o'clock. And once again, due to the length of the number of things that we have on our agenda, we're anticipating that we're going to need to go to at least 12:30. I will say till 12:30. We will be having another discussion at that meeting about the living wage proposal, and because we're, again, expecting that there will be people from the community here, we're going to put that toward the beginning of the agenda so that people who are here for that item won't have to wait for the whole meeting. We're going to meet here in this room as we did last time. We'll be sitting around these desks. That's it.
Thank you. Questions? Carol?
Yeah, thank you for the written report, Pat. It's really informative and helpful to have. I noticed that there was fundraising. And as a
Carol, but this is the government operations.
I'm sorry.
I haven't gotten to that one yet.
Yeah, you're right. I'm in the wrong committee. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate the compliment to Pan, anyway. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol.
Okay. That one, we will be meeting on October 7th at 3:30. We haven't picked a location yet. We will talk about meeting in this room. We met on Wednesday, September 4th, out of sync, and most the resolutions that we passed had to do with the Biggs property. The developer of the Biggs property is going to come to our next meeting. We felt like it was too much tonight, along with the budget presentation, so we've put off the resolutions that we passed to our next meeting. So you'll hear more about that. There's a vacancy on the Planning Advisory Board on an education seat, and we had an interesting discussion. It's an education seat, and there are three colleges and only two education seats. So if people have strong feelings about how to rotate those among the colleges, that's still up for grabs. And then the program that was formerly known as JARC, which is now called the Special Community Mobility Projects Program, will be engaged in a solicitation process. There's some money available. So just if you know those in the community who might have ideas for applying for that kind of money, Dwight Mengel, I think, is probably the right contact to send them to. Thank you. That's all I've got.
Broadband. Pat Pryor.
Yes, thank you. As you may recall, last time I was asked to provide an update on where we are with the broadband project. I think rather than try to go through this all tonight, I'd be happy to answer questions if you have questions. But I will also arrange to have this report put up on the website. We have a broadband section on the county website. That way the whole thing can be available to the public. And they won't have to depend on what brief comments I might make tonight to summarize it. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer your questions. Frank?
I think Carol had the first question, then Frank.
Sorry.
Thanks. You work so hard, Pat. It's great that you give these reports. So forgive me for confusing. You mentioned that there was fundraising. And it was somewhat successful. So I just, as a former fundraiser, I know it's always good to acknowledge those who've given, and I just wondered if you could tell us more, just so we can thank those who've put money in the pot to make up the difference.
The village of Cuga Heights has made a contribution, the town of Danby, and then there are a number of private individuals, I don't have all their names here tonight, who have made commitments to the funding.
Thanks them on all of our behalf.
Frank.
Thanks, Mr. Vice Chair. Pat, to stay on the same line as Carol, I read in reading this project update that you gave us tonight, can you say how much money we're actually short approximately?
Let's see, we are short. We're probably short at least 500,000. I'm not sure if it's, don't totally quote me on that, I need to check to be sure, but I think that's a ballpark figure.
And that amount would cover the entire build out and whatnot.
Remember that the grant that only covers 80% of the project. Now, some of that amount will be covered by the municipalities because there are in-kind donations that are being made. So the actual cash figure, which may be what you were asking about, would be less than that, maybe between $300,000 and
$350,000. Okay. I see you for a minute after the meeting.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up on Frank's. Was that for both county area or our county?
That's for both. I don't have the breakdown.
Short in Tompkins County?
I don't have the breakdown, but what I can tell you is that there's a figure in the last paragraph that the project expects to serve over 5,703 households. Those are divided approximately equally between Tompkins and Cuba County. Now, you can't assume that the costs are equally divided, but it does give you some sense.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks for all the work that committee does. I think we've got some minutes, August 29th and September 3rd.
Move both sets.
Frank's moving both sets together.
If you separate them, I'll vote for one of them, but not both of them.
Frank, don't pass that up.
That's rare.
Frank, move
August
29th.
Why don't we separate them? I'll move the
second, but for August 29th.
Thanks for helping me, Mike.
Pam, ready to vote on those? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's Carol's opposed, so that's 13-1. September 3rd?
Move those.
Seconded by Pat. Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Here we go.
Those opposed? That's four opposed?
No, sorry. No.
Show me the ones that are opposed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got it.
You're opposed?
Yeah.
All right. So that's 11-1. That passes. Unfinished business. Excuse me, Pat.
This is kind of unfinished business.
Okay.
Dave just realized that I didn't, or reminded me that I didn't mention about future meetings of the broadband committee. At this point, we do not have agenda items for September, and I'm not sure if we'll have a meeting in October. You'll have to stay tuned to hear about any meeting in October, but we're not planning to have a September meeting. I'm kind of checking in and seeing how the project is going and seeing if there are issues that come up that we need to meet about at this point.
Thank you. Jim?
I'm hesitant about bringing this up, but I've been reading a lot of emails, and many of you have probably also, about wood burning in the city of Ithaca. And some of the emails border on, I don't know where they go, but I see legislators putting their name in from time to time. I see legislators from the city putting their name in from time to time. And what troubles me is that the health department seems to be the bad guy in all of this and the one who is not responding. And it continues to happen over and over again. Someone put in the other day that it really wasn't the health department. They do inside stuff. They do inside the house when it comes to air quality. The city is in charge of the code enforcement, so they have some responsibility. And DEC, I think it came from DEC, they don't really have control over that outside. So I know that there are people around the table who are involved in the committee. It's winter, or it will be winter soon, fall, and obviously wood burning is taking place. And I would really like to see something happen with it. Number one, that the health department is not the whipping boy for this whole thing. And so all of you who are answering emails, talk to me, talk to the public, send me. Where are we going with this?
I'll just say that as somebody who, who's got folks in my district, just sent out an email a few minutes ago. I've made it clear that, in my opinion, it's not the health department's responsibility, it's the legislature's. And when we get the will to do something about it, we will. But right now, we really don't seem to be anywhere close to making a move on that. And as long as we don't, I don't think the city will. So that's my opinion on that.
I have one bit of unfinished business, and that is since our last meeting, we had a primary election, and one of our brethren here, sisters here,
sisterin,
won a primary election. Congratulations, Catherine.
13 Yay, votes. Okay. Every vote counts. Thank you.
Are we ready to adjourn, folks?
Why don't we adjourn?
Frank's moving to adjourn, seconded by Pam. All in favor? Those opposed? Thank you to Kathy Covert, Michelle Pothorff.
Let me just remind you that Kathy Covert will take your money.